We continue on the Cavs-Celtics talk as we head out to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Welcoming in Brian Scalabrine, NBC Sports Boston, SiriusXM NBA Now. Brian, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm sitting in the garden. The court is all green. The Cavs are warming up. It's going to be a great night here in Boston.
How are we feeling about the cup courts? Because we just had that conversation.
So you guys, the maroon, it was not as bad as I thought. Red is awful. Pink, awful. Grays are my favorite, but the green looks pretty good.
Oh, kind of looks like a tennis court to me, Brian.
Yeah, a little bit. Good call. Really good call. Like they're playing on AstroTurf.
Yeah, a little bit. what would a win mean for the Cavs against the Celtics tonight?
Massive. I think they're for real. Like, if you just look at all their numbers, the way they're clutch scoring, they're shooting. I love the second unit where they bomb threes. Their inside play, 2-point field goal percentage. They're just operating on a really high level offensively. And if you come in here and you win a game that has some meaning behind it, I think it would mean a lot. Like, I get it. The Celtics aren't fully healthy without Porzingis and everything like that. But I can't imagine that the Cavs throughout this whole season are not for real throughout the entirety. If they stay relatively healthy and they can probably carry a few injuries, short-term injuries, they're going to be right up there. It's not the best record in the East, or right up there with the Celtics in the number one or number two seed.
So it feels huge from the Cavs side of things because we're the little brother in this exchange. You guys just gentlemanly swept us in the second round of the playoffs last year. From the Boston perspective, is this the kind of game you think that this team would get up for?
Yeah, I'm assuming yes. We've had our fair share of we're not sleepwalking. That's not the case because, you guys have seen it when LeBron. Like, I'm sure every team circled the calendar. Oh, we're going to play against LeBron. Oh, we're going to play against the champs. Oh, we're going to bring our best effort. Like, we're getting that this year from Toronto to Detroit to all those teams in the East. And we're not playing, consistent basketball as of right now. I mean, our record is fine, but we've been punched in the mouth a few times. We had to go to overtime to beat Toronto the other night. And, they had the game of their life. But, I think when you look at like Cleveland and the level that they play at, they play very similar to the way that we played last year. They're getting up and down the floor. They're moving the ball. Their assist is up. Their field goal percentage is up. And it looks similar. It just looks smaller. Like, your team across the board from all your wings and stuff like that are smaller than what you would say our wings are.
So what is it exactly you like about this Cavs team from last year to this year? I mean, Brian, I think the Cavs team that you guys played, the Celtics played in the postseason last year, entirely different. I mean, no Jared Allen for that entire postseason or the entire second round. This year, obviously, Darius Garland's taken a massive step forward from where he was last year as well. Mobley has taken a step forward as well. What is it that you like so much?
I mean, I like the Cavs. I like Allen and Mobley. I like their defensive versatility. So, and I've always been a Darius Garland guy. I'm actually was surprised when he didn't start out better than he did, and then he finally kind of hit his stride and became an all-star. But, I like their team. I think if you had to say, one weakness, they're just, they're small. Like, across the board, they're a smaller team. And it's hard. Like, if they can rebound at a high enough clip, they're going to be fine. I think it's going to come down to that. Can they get stops and defend and defensive rebound? Because and then another thing that will happen tonight, if you want to look from a strategy standpoint, like, the Celtics are going to try to pick on Darius Garland. Can they rotate the bigs around those guys to protect them? They're going to try to post those guys early. They're going to try to keep the bigs away from the perimeter. So we'll see a lot of that. But, the Cavs check all boxes. The one concerning thing would just be their positional size from one all the way down. Like, they're not a massive team. We have a 7'2" Porzingis and Al Horford at the four at times, but we won a championship last year with Al Horford playing the five, but we're pretty big across, our wings, and Tatum 6'9", Jaylen Brown plays bigger than he is. Same thing with Holiday and White. Like, our team just plays a lot bigger than what they really are.
Brian Scalabrine on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline ahead of Cavs-Celtics. It's a cup game. It's a streak game. It's also kind of important, for the eventual tiebreakers that we can have the conversation about. One of the interesting things that I think, as a former NBA player, you can speak to this better than anyone else. I've been really shocked at how Kenny Atkinson, for some in Cleveland, has been lost in the shuffle. because they fall back on the narrative that head coaches don't matter in the NBA anymore. What do you think about just that working theory that coaches are relatively unimportant?
No, I don't. I'm not. So I just think, well, I can answer that question really quick, right? So load up another question. In a league where the margins are so small, the head coach, I would say your four assistants, your bench coaches are important. Your training staff, your chef is important. Like the margins in the NBA, where everybody knows everything that they're doing. We spend $1 million. Every team spends $1 million a year on film. Like every small little margin that you can get makes a difference. So no, it's not. It's head coach. It's GM. It's ownership. Like all this stuff matters, you know. And ultimately, like players are the ones that are definitely, you know, making plays and how you win games. But you know, the difference between you winning and losing a game could be one or two possessions. So if you want every advantage you can get, and I think Kenny Atkinson is doing a really good job with this group, and I like their commitment offensively. I like their spacing. I like their passing. And I like the fact that he had one game where they weren't defending, and he called them all out. They won a game, and he eviscerated them in the media about not defending. So, like, that stuff makes a big difference.
Do you like watching these games and then realizing when you go to the box score that a lot of the Celtics games just rely on, did we shoot the three ball well or did we not?
I mean, it's more than that. It's how well you get downhill. You know, it's how well you attack the rim. It's how well you defend the rim. Do you defend without fouling? Do you adjust to the game? There's more than just three-point shooting. And it's just, like, the end result, it's easy to say, look, we just missed shots. But there's just so much more to it. Like, how are you getting those shots? And I would say, like, in anything, like in any sport, there's a process to everything. I don't know a lot about football, but I'm assuming – you know, hey, they missed tackles today. They got tackles. No, it's like there's way more involved to all that. So I just think, like, when people – that's just an easy way of looking at it. Hey, it's a make-miss league, but there's a process to all that. And that's how you – and there's a reason. Like, you guys bomb threes, but you're also right now number one in NBA history in two-point field goal percentage. So is it just about threes? What about that? Like, what about that side of it? In a world where they used to just live by the two, you guys are dominating that area. And I think you're dominating that area because you do bomb threes.
Brian, there's a lot of people crowning the Celtics as the next dynasty. And because of the era we live in, maybe, I'm just not ready and I'm not there yet, even though I think they're ridiculously talented and awesome to watch. I'm just curious, like, have you crowned them? Do you think it's fait accompli that they're going to be a dynasty?
Well, I don't know. What's your definition of a dynasty? Like, four championships, three championships. Like, if it's, yeah. I can't go there because, like, we have an aging Al Horford. You have Porzingis, who, you know, he has some injury history. So if those two guys were 27 and 28, I might be able to do that. But we don't know how much longer Al Horford has left. He was a big part of it. If we don't have Al Horford last year, I mean, I don't know, maybe we win, but I don't know, man. Like, he is so valuable for our team. He makes big shots for our team. And then Porzingis, you know, like, but if you were to tell me, like, for the next 5 years, Al's going to play at this level and Porzingis is going to be healthy, then I would say, okay, we can start talking about that. But, you know, like, those guys are getting up there and Porzingis has to figure out a way to stay healthy. And if they do, then, yeah, we can start talking about a dynasty and all that. But, you know, in the NBA nowadays, man, I mean, look at, like, Joel Embiid won the MVP 2 years ago. And look at the guy now. Like, he's just moping around the floor. He looks awful out there. So you can't take anything for granted in this league.
Are the Cavs getting rewarded for running it back with the core four and a lot of the same pieces from last year? I feel like continuity in the NBA, we see it with Boston, we see it with the Cavs. It's not there in the rest of the East the same way.
No, I think they're getting rewarded for being patient with Allen and Mobley. Like, there's probably a lot of talk about breaking those guys up. And then, like, instead of breaking them up, how about trying to make it work first? Because you have defensive versatility. They don't have massive size. Like, you're not sitting at it like a Mitchell Robinson or Isaiah Hartenstein. They're not big like that. But, man, they are quick off their feet. And they can guard the perimeter. And you have one that can play on the court at all times. It's a definite rim presence. So, you know, like, if people have thought about breaking up, Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell, then that's also being a little bit impatient. You know, like, I think that they've shown good patience, and I think they're benefiting that. Just like at one point, I'm sure there were people out there that thought you should break up Tatum and Brown, And instead of breaking up those guys, they just made adjustments to the roster so those guys could do better.
Brian, we got about 30 seconds here. When it comes to the NBA Cup, do they already need to change it, or is the best thing to make this thing successful to let it be what it is now for a considerable amount of time before changing?
Yeah, I don't know about changing. I kind of like where it's at right now. I think how the games are kind of a regular season game, so I'm really good with it. Last year, I think like the first three games, people were like, "What is this?" And by the end, people were trying to beat people by 25. Like, I think we're starting to see that a little bit more. And for a team that's really not doesn't have a chance to win it, this could be a big thing for their season. You know, I'm all in on the Cup, and I like the changes.
Brian, we're all in on this being a damn good interview, buddy. We appreciate you. Great stuff, and thank you for your time.
You got it. See ya.
Brian Scalabrini there on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. NBC Sports Boston, SiriusXM NBA. We'll react to what he had to say later in the show, because when we come back, Albert Breer, MMQB, also of Boston Media, we'll talk about the Browns situation, maybe a smattering of Cavs-Celtics late in the interview as well on 92.3 The Fan. We go out to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. You know him every Tuesday, 520, the great Albert Breer of MMQB. What's up, buddy?
Hey, guys. What's happening?
Oh, just enjoying an absolute directionless Brown season. How about you?
Well, I have 31 other teams to take me away from that. But, it's been an interesting year in Cleveland, no question.
You have better children. That's what I hear there. So I am curious, because we've had a lot of discussion about where the Browns are and how bad this can get. Do you think when it comes to Stefanski, Barry, DePodesta, the whole lot, big sweeping changes, do you think that the difference between 0-8, but it looks competitive, and 0-8 and it looks non-competitive is the difference between many people getting fired and no one getting fired?
Yeah, I think things would have to be pretty cataclysmic the rest of the way for everybody to get fired. It took the Haslams, you know, a lot of time to get to the point where they really had a setup that they were comfortable with and they liked, and you guys lived it, you know, like everybody out there listening lived it, saw the half measures and the, all right, well, let's do this and this. And, you know, let's get like the, you know, like let's get the analytics guy in Sashi Brown. No, that didn't work. Let's go get John Dorsey instead. And, you know, trying to marry analytics and hardcore football with Hugh and Sashi working together. It's just so many different iterations of it. You know, you had Kyle Shanahan in the building and he hated it so much that he wrote a manifesto on why he wanted to leave, you know? Mm-hmm. So, you know, like it took them a long time to get to something that they really were comfortable with and they really liked. And I think that they got there with Kevin and with Andrew and with, you know, with Paul DePodesta over the top of it. And I think, you know, DePodesta being there, you know, for DePodesta's presence there before all of this sort of, I think, telegraphed that maybe this was the sort of direction they wanted to go in to begin with, you know? So I just have a hard time seeing them pulling up stakes on the entire operation again, unless it gets to some point where you're like, there is no way they can go forward with this. So does it look great now? No. But I think you could argue, you know, given the quarterback situation and where it is, given their situation at tackle and what that's been, you know, it's pretty easy to get to a point where you can give these guys a mulligan and say, you know what, they made the playoffs in two of their first 4 years. Kevin Stefanski was coach of the year twice. You know, they showed they've got something pretty sturdy in 2023. It didn't work out the same way in 24, but that doesn't mean you should pull the plug on everything.
Albert, the Browns are in a weird spot when it comes to Mike Vrabel. He's one of the hot coaching candidates now, but he's also he's in the building, and they're elevating his duties.
A local legend.
Yeah, right. Yeah. There's so much there, and the fans are already clamoring. Albert, it's been 1 week of just get Stefanski out, put Vrabel in. The dynamic here, though, you have to admit, it's odd.
So I think, you know, first of all, I think Mike was a top 10, if not top 5, head coach in the NFL, you know, and I think Tennessee was foolish for letting him go. Like, that's my opinion on it. I felt that. I've been on the record saying that. Like, I think he's a really, really good head coach. And I think he'll be a head coach somewhere in 2025. Again, the Browns really like where they're at. Like, I could see where Vrabel, you know, has appeal for them for a number of different reasons. Number one, like, you know, like he's very much a program leader. right? Like, so if you need somebody to unify you, if the rest of the league were to, if the rest of the year were to really circle the drain, again, I'm talking about like a catastrophic situation where, you know, it just looks like you can't go forward with what you have. Well, you know, Vrabel is somebody who has shown he can kind of bring a group together and is a true program leader. The other thing about Mike, and again, this is like sort of if you're looking to, you know, pull that Deshaun lever, is that he does have the pre-existing relationship with Deshaun Watson. And I think, you know, just knowing a lot of people that have been around Deshaun and that know Deshaun from Houston, they tell you like one of the things that was really important in making it work in Houston was the trust that Deshaun had with all the people there and the ability those people had to dish out tough love with him and be really hard on him and coach him hard. And, you know, I think if there were going to be a change, you would look at like, okay, like how do we salvage the Deshaun Watson situation? And I think one of the first places you would look is like, okay, how do we recreate what he had in Houston? And you got the guy right there, Mike Vrabel, you know, who is a part of all of that. But again, like I think, you know, Kevin and Andrew wind up the head coach and general manager in 2025, and Mike Vrabel is probably somewhere else.
So with that, Albert, if because I think Cleveland fans have taken a side, right? They're either pro Stefanski, anti Barry, or pro Barry, anti Stefanski. If let's say the Browns organization was leaning in one direction, because I tend to think for right now what you're saying makes sense, but if they got to a point where they were going to choose to bring back one of the guy, who do you think would be more likely to come back with the other going, Barry or Stefanski?
You know, my default, and it's hard because, like, generally in these situations when you're talking about, like, keeping one and getting rid of the other, there's some sort of acrimony between the sides, and you feel like you have to pull the plug on one or the other, and that doesn't really exist in Cleveland. You know, like, I don't think Kevin and AB are on different pages whatsoever. I think they're still in lockstep and, you know, still working together. So it's just hard for me to conjure a situation where one is gone and the other isn't. You know, that said, I think generally what you do in that situation, you default to keeping the GM, you know, and that's just the way that it works because generally the way you look at it, and it depends sometimes on when someone is hired versus when the other person's hired. But, you know, generally, like, you know, like the head coach is assessed over like 3 or 4 year periods where the GM is assessed over a decade, you know, and that's why they often say with GMs, like, well, how many hires has he gotten? How many times has he had a chance to hire the head coach? Which, you know, it can be the death knell when, like, GM's had 2 or 3 chances already to hire the head coach. You know, it happened with Tom Telesco with the Chargers, who I think he did a good job of putting talent on that roster, but he had already had 3 swings at hiring the head coach, so he wasn't going to stay for the Jim Harbaugh era, you know? So I think the likelihood would generally be that the general manager would survive over the head coach, but that's not specific to what's going on in Cleveland because, again, I think they've worked in lockstep to the level where it's hard to really – separate one from the other.
Albert, we're going to need our pound of flesh somewhere. Is that Jim Schwartz? Is that like what does that end
yeah,
up being?
Yeah, I know, and I've thought about that too. You know what I mean? Like, so the pound of flesh is like, where do you get that? Where does that come from? And I honestly don't know. I mean, obviously the defense hasn't been anywhere near as good as it was a year ago. So, you know, do you chalk that up to, like, you know, the injury situation with Denzel Ward's injury issues and Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah? Like, do you look at that? Do you say, like, this is because, you know, there was a year where there was no tape on him and the league is catching up to what Schwartz is doing? That's what that assessment would be on. Yeah, I really don't know. I mean, I just, based on the job they did over their first 4 years, it's hard for me to look at it and not say they might all just get like a 1 year mulligan. And there might be a lot of people under pressure in 2025 as a result. But, you know, again, like, I just think the Haslams really like the model that they have, you know, and rightfully so. Like, I do think a lot of, like, I think that's, that organization is, I mean, maybe, I don't know, you guys are closer to it than me. Like, this is probably the most stable the Browns have been, you know, in the new Browns era, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which, I mean, again, like, is that like being the tallest midget? I don't know. But, like, you know, like, I mean, it is. I think it clearly is the most stable they've been, right?
Yeah, it's not really a debate. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, do you really, if you're the owner and you've been seeking that sort of stability for this much time, is this the time to to flip over the apple cart. I mean, everybody's got blood on their hands from the Deshaun Watson thing, right? Like, you know, so I think you bring back the same group, and then it's like your number one thing now becomes, how do we manage this going forward? You know, like how, like, so, okay, like now that we're moving forward with this group, like, what's the quarterback plan? And, you know, I think based on wherever they're picking, they're certainly going to kick the tires on the quarterback in the draft and find a way to put competition in the room for Deshaun, because I don't see a way out of that contract. I don't think that's happening.
Albert, to look around the NFL, Joe Douglas got fired today. That means the GM and the head coach getting murked in New York. What does that mean for Aaron Rodgers' future, not just in the NFL, but certainly in New York?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, it certainly puts that in that question to the forefront. And you know, I think you look at where they are from a roster standpoint. Like, it would be in a relatively attractive job if you look at the young players: Garrett Wilson, Olu Fashanu, you know, Sauce Gardner, Quincy Williams. Like, it's like Breece Hall. Like, there's like a good core of young players there that Joe Douglas leaves behind. But how are you going to attract people with the ownership situation, you know? And like, Aaron Rodgers was already like openly complaining about like the atmosphere in that organization. Like, you guys remember that last year, right? Like, mm-hmm. We need to get the rats out of here or whatever it was, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, what do you think he like deep down thinks right now? You know what I mean? Like, does he want to put up with it? So on one hand, it's like, oh, well, this would be an attractive situation for a head coach or general manager based on the young talent. On the other hand, it's like, who wants to go work for Woody Johnson after what just happened? And after the last 25 years, the way that organization has been run, you know, it's a weird situation where there are good players there. And I think some players that you can build around, but you know, why would a head coach or a general manager want to go work there? And, honestly, like, why would Aaron Rodgers want to stay there if he's got, you know, a viable option somewhere else, or if it's in his head that he might just retire? I don't know. I think all that stuff is really up in the air right now.
Let me ask about Zach Taylor in Cincinnati. I don't know that he's going to lose his job, but now two postseasons in a row missed with Joe Burrow. They don't have a defense. It's a mom and pop shop operation. They have not supported him. But is this enough for him to lose his job?
I hope the Brown family takes this as a wake up call. They have such an incredible, incredible opportunity in front of them with this quarterback. And I don't know how much you guys have watched him. He's still as good as he was, don't mm-hmm. you think?
He's been incredible.
You know what I mean? Like you watch him on Sunday night. I mean, he did freaking everything he could. And the Chargers went right down the field in three plays. And the Chargers went out this offseason and got Jim Harbaugh to be their head coach. And they've spent on the roster. And, like, that's a family that's known for being cheap themselves, right? The Spanoses are. Mm-hmm. That's been their reputation, at least. And so, like, I just think, you know, like, I think this is a good chance for the Bengals to take a hard look at their organization. I mean, they have like five scouts working for them, and that's barely even an exaggeration. You know, like, there's a reason why they always draft big school guys, because they don't have the wit, they don't have the scouting infrastructure to go and beat the bushes at like your FCS schools, you know, or for, you know, some of your lower level free agents. It's an organization that really needs to be modernized. And I hope losing this way with Joe Burrow sort of wakes some people up to it, because you look at their defense, right? And so we know what they are offensively. They're still really good offensively, but on defense,
mm-hmm.
I mean, Sam Hubbard's gotten older, right? So DJ Reader's gone. You know, like, DJ Turner's probably a backup corner. You know, Cam Taylor Britt has been inconsistent. You know, they bring back Von Bell because they weren't able to replace he and Jesse Bates, and he's gotten old. Like, there are all these things that have happened for them on defense that it points back, like, the margin for error there is razor thin, because they aren't spending on scouting, they aren't spending on the bottom parts of their roster. And you know, again, like, hopefully, I would hope that, like, you know, somebody there is going to say, like, we need to start doing things that are going to put us on a championship level before we, you know, get in a position where this quarterback isn't happy anymore. You know, I just think it's on everybody in that organization to sort of take a hard look in the mirror right now, because they should be right there with the Bills and the Chiefs competing for the AFC's number one seed, and they aren't right now.
Albert, really great stuff, buddy. Appreciate you. Enjoy the big Cavs-Celtics matchup tonight. The Cavs are winning, just telling you.
Are they undefeated still? I cannot pay close attention to basketball during football season. Love the NBA, but are they still undefeated?
They are. And they Albert, are. That question hurt Nick in more ways than you'll ever know.
Thought we were friends.
Why did it hurt you?
Because I am the preeminent streaker on the show. I am
big
the
streaker.
I've been on this streak since day one. Is it like 5-0? And I not only that, it's a cup game. I'm a big cupper. And, I mean, I just felt like you'd know. I felt we were simpatico.
He's been trying to sell me on the importance of a streak for weeks.
I think, like in the middle of November when football season's full swing, like, I think it's a victory that I even knew that I knew that they were undefeated, right? Mm,
take that, JP.
I mean credit okay. to me for being aware of something happening in the NBA.
That's true.
I'll give you your kudo, my friend. We appreciate you, bud. Thank you so much.
All right, thanks, guys. Have a good one.
You too. Albert Breer there of the MMQB on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. You feel better about that? You feel better about where the Browns are after that? I think I might have a glimmer of hope. If you're somebody who's got infuriated at, yeah, I think they're coming back because the Haslam feel comfortable with this.
A mulligan.
I think I heard something that might make sense. It's just... You're going to have to give something to get something. And I don't think you're going to want to give what you're going to have to give. That's next on 92.3 The Fan. We do have the 5 at 5 at 6 coming up in 15 minutes. I think we got a lot of response, both in the amount of quick calls we had. I don't know about you, but I got a couple tweets, got a couple texts. Like, is he serious? I think that's why I've tried to say that I'm still open-minded to this. Like, I'm not convinced that the Browns are going to fire everyone. They might fire one person. They might just fire the guy that's annoyed everybody. I'm still not entirely sure that they're going to do the whole house cleaning, even as depressed as I was hearing that.
Well, and so I think it's interesting that Albert had that mentality, and Albert's as plugged in as it gets. Mary Kay Cabot on with Baskin and Phelps. We'll have the clip for you guys in the 5 at 5 at 6. Said that, you know, very similar rhetoric when it came to Kevin Stefanski. Right? Like, doesn't think the Haslams are ready to shake it up and make a big time change. I'm paraphrasing, but it's essentially what you said. Nick, it seems like Mulligan is on the table. It's going to make nobody happy, but it seems like Mulligan is on the table.
So I think what's interesting about the Mulligan on the table thing is that also might be they're still giving them 7 games to save this.
Well, and so the problem I had with the whole discussion, there was two things. One, obviously, that you put the mulligan into play, and we can talk about that, and we will talk about that. Albert kept going back to the idea that Deshaun Watson was going to be competitive with somebody else next season, and that would be the route that they would go. He brought up Deshaun when, in talking about Mike Vrabel, he was even like, oh, well, that would be somebody that would interest them because of the relationship with Deshaun, and it can bring back some of the Houston vibes that he had. And I was like, huh? Like, I thought Deshaun was dead and buried in my mind. Like, in no world did I think Deshaun was going to be competing for a job next year. I thought he was going to be a lot on the books, but I didn't have him actually playing next year at all.
So with that being said, because the more I heard Albert talk through it, I think everybody knows you're in wait and see with the Browns, but you don't want to go out on the limb yet of saying, yeah, Kevin or Andrew's in real danger. Like, I think this thing still is playing out in real time. But I think it's a really fascinating catch-22 of if I could tell you Mike Vrabel was going to be the head coach next year, but it meant one more year of faking it like you're going to try and get something out of Deshaun, is that a trade-off you're willing to have? Because I would. Because I don't know. I mean, I'm looking at this quarterback, everything out there.
But then you start Vrabel off on the worst foot imaginable.
Yeah, I think you're already going to start off. If you fire, one of the reasons to keep Kevin is you think this thing's going to go bad next year and you want to give a clean slate to a new head coach and GM in 2026.
I mean, if it's acknowledged that we know, we understand that Vrabel's not seeing the fifth year, it's just the fourth year because he's a body and he's expensive and you're going to lose a lot of games, right?
You're talking about Watson.
Sorry, what did I say?
You said Vrabel. It's okay. Sorry.
No. Like that's the idea. You sell it with Vrabel because you asked me Vrabel or like if you did Watson for the season, but Vrabel was your head coach, you'd be selling on the idea that Watson's there for the fourth year, not the fifth year, and you would be losing a lot of games in the process, and then ultimately you'd move off of Deshaun for the fifth year, you'd draft a quarterback, and then you'd go from there.
I don't know that Mike would do that.
I don't think so. I think he's got a lot of prime opportunities waiting for him. I don't know why you do it outside of always just always wanting to be the Browns head coach, and that would be it.
I don't know the Vegas job is a prime opportunity.
I didn't say the Vegas job.
What do you think of the prime opportunities?
I think there's a couple that could potentially be out there that we don't yet know are. The Bengals would be one of them. Coaching Joe Burrow, I think, is a great opportunity.
All right. I think that's fair. I think, well... But then ownership is also a problem, but I understand what you're saying.
I don't know. There's a couple names I threw out before the season got underway, and some of these have shifted a little bit. Sean McDermott, I think, is safer than maybe he was a few weeks ago when we started to have some of those conversations. That is Dak Prescott, is that appealing to you? Probably not. You know, the Eagles job.
The Eagles thing's really interesting.
It seems like Sirianni has played his way or coached his way into being able to keep his job there. Like, but there's a couple appetizing spots.
But I will say I would make the trade. But, man, I would be concerned in making this trade. Like, if you said Kevin Stefanski and a new quarterback, or Mike Vrabel and a new quarterback competing with Deshaun Watson, meaning you draft a guy to see, all right, who's the better quarterback, I think I'll take the Mike Vrabel route. Because I think my point is you can't have Deshaun and Kevin back.
No, I'm with you 100%. Like, you cannot do that.
And the one,
and that's not a mulligan, by the way. That's just running back bad.
Yes. But the one thing that would stick in my dome there is you're now giving Deshaun one more different circumstance to be involved in. Meaning, Kevin has not done a good job of building an offense that suits Deshaun's strengths, and he's getting the ultimate pass because Deshaun just hasn't been good. As if there isn't some sort of relationship between the circumstance a player plays in and how well they play. But if you're the Browns, if you're Jimmy Haslam, you thought, I'm not ready to bite that bullet financially, and I have 1% doubt that Deshaun was just not put in a good situation here by Kevin and Andrew, that would be the way you sell it. Again, I think in the end, you sell it to Vrabel completely differently on the low than you do externally, but I could at least get myself to some hope because Mike Vrabel's a head coach, and I know even if it takes an extra year, then in the end, Mike Vrabel will build something sustainable of doing what he did in Tennessee, which is go to the playoffs for 3 straight years and win for 4 straight years.
Yeah, it's almost, if you ran it back with, let's say, instead of the Vrabel idea, if you went Stefanski and Watson, aren't you just saying, we're just going to play for the year after and then figure it all out? Because then, yes, like you'd be admitting you don't want to put a coach in a bad situation, a new coach in a bad situation. So Stefanski would just be, it's not even a lame duck coach. He would just be entering to eventually be slaughtered. And maybe there comes a spot where Stefanski's even like, this is a bridge too far.
I think what's interesting about what you just said is, I think for a fan base that gleefully kept with his team through 1-31, I think being awful with that guy as the starting quarterback, I think would be a bridge too far.
For sure.
Specifically, with all the other pieces back as well.
Yeah, in my mind, there's no way he plays another down with the Browns. There's zero way, but Albert gave a lot of
The 5 at 5 at 6. Next on 92.3 The Fan.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.